get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam, a charming man who infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
This season of Desert Island Dishes is sponsored by Maldon Salt, the finest natural sea salt flakes handcrafted from the British coastline. They are, quite frankly, the masters of salt, putting craft, care, and passion into everything they do. You only have to read one of my recipes to know that I use Maldon Salt every single day for all of my cooking. To say I am a fan is an understatement, so to be working with them this season is a dream come true. I'm often asked about the secret to getting better at cooking, and my answer is honestly always the same. It comes down to seasoning, and not just as an afterthought. You have to season at every stage, and that's why I love Maldon Salt. It's light and delicate due to the soft and crunchy pyramid-shaped flakes, and it's just the easiest way to take simple dishes to the next level. Trust me, your cooking life will not be the same. Thank you very much to Maldon Salt. Hi, I'm Margie Nomura, and welcome to the Desert Island Dishes podcast. This is the podcast where every week I ask my guests to choose their 7 Desert Island dishes. These range from finding out about the dish that most reminds them of their childhood, the best dish they've ever eaten, and of course, the last dish they would choose to eat before being cast off to the desert island. The question is, what would you choose as your last meal? Hi, I hope you're all well and that you're having a lovely week. This past week has flown by and it feels like I was only just talking to you, but we have another brilliant guest for you today, the one and only Ruby Wax. Ruby is currently performing her critically acclaimed show, I'm Not As Well As I Thought I Was, and I was lucky enough to sit down with her in between shows. Ruby has done many amazing things over the course of her career, as you will hear, but cooking has not been part of it. And whilst this is predominantly a podcast about food, more than that, I think it's a podcast about people. I love the range of people I get to talk to on here from the world of food, but also beyond. And the way I try to choose my guests is by thinking about the conversations we will have and the stories we can hear, all interspersed with tales of food and delicious dishes. We all eat and we all have dishes that mean something to us for some reason or another. And I love hearing the stories behind the food. It's kind of what makes us human. And I really think framing the conversation around food gives us an insight into people that we just might not get in another conversation. Ruby has interviewed some of the biggest names in the world, and it's quite nerve-wracking interviewing an interviewer. However, she was completely charming and very generous with her time. And I really hope you enjoyed today's episode. My guest today is Ruby Wax. Ruby really needs no introduction from me. She's a household name. She's a woman of so many talents. She's a comedian, actress, author, writer, and mental health activist. Her life in show business began when she went to the RSC, and she says of herself, she doesn't think she was a good actress. But Alan Rickman saw in her a talent for comedy, and that was what started her on the road to success. She went on to become a TV star, interviewing some of the world's most famous people, from Donald Trump to Goldie Hawn, the Spice Girls, and O.J. Simpson. Her second career has been as a mental health campaigner. She trained as a psychotherapist and got a master's from Oxford in mindfulness-based cognitive therapy. Her dissertation formed the basis for her first sellout stage show, and she launched the Frazzled Cafe in 2017 and was also awarded an OBE in 2015. Welcome, Ruby.
Thank you. That's pretty succinct. That sums me up.
Wow.
No. Yeah, not really, but yeah.
Well, yeah, I know. I was going to say I could have gone on for hours, but I didn't want to just speak at you.
No, no.
Are you someone who, when you listen to something like that...
You think, no, that's no. Never. And when I take an OBE, I say an OBE in America, they think I have a yeast infection or cystitis. They say, I'm really sorry, you should take penicillin.
So sorry to hear about
nothing.
That.
It means nothing. It means nothing.
So you don't look back and reflect on your success?
No, I think it's that I made it up.
It doesn't feel
real. Because I'm a terrible actress, and so I think, how did I get into the RSC? And I think that was just push.
So I read a quote of yours that said, I once learned to cook potatoes, but I've forgotten now. So it might be fair to say that you're not particularly interested in cooking. But in all the interviews I've read of yours, food does come up in nearly all of them. So I think you are very passionate about food.
Well, I like putting it in.
Yes.
But I don't like prepare, you know, I don't understand the point. Because if I had 5 more minutes to live, I wouldn't like to be using a spatula.
Okay, but you would.
Or a bullet.
But you might use it to eat.
I would scoop it up, I would put it in my mouth, and then I'd insist on drugs.
Okay.
Before, if I had 5 minutes left, kids, not in a lifetime.
All the kids listening out there, just to clarify.
Yeah, all the kids.
So you are in the middle of your West End performance, and then you're going back to your critically acclaimed tour. I wondered, for this sort of thing, you obviously have a passion for performing, but what I'm most interested in, Ruby, is do you have a rider?
No, what? I don't. I don't have one. I have water there.
Really?
I'm really an easy.
Okay.
I'm a sucker. I could ask, but they'd laugh at me.
What would you ask for?
I would ask for spare ribs and chicken legs. I just eat the bones.
Well, I think you should do that.
No, I couldn't. I don't want to be difficult.
There's so much to talk about, so we're going to dive straight in. And I've read so much about you and listened to so many interviews. I think I might know what you're going to say for your first desert island dish. And that's the dish that most reminds you of your childhood.
Yeah, my dad was a casing king. Nobody knows what casing is. The outside of a hot dog, mm-hmm. or salami. It's the it's like he's a fashion designer for meat.
Yes,
and so he would only let me eat sausages with the skin on the outside, like stuff a farmyard into a condom.
Okay.
You're getting the idea.
Okay.
And that's all I ate. That's why he had a quadruple bypass when I was young, because
oh, wow.
we only ate hot dogs. And then I said, please, can we have something else? So my mother made a hot dog and put 2 smaller sausages on the side with toothpicks and said, that's chicken. That's chicken.
Very inventive.
Yeah.
And I read that your dad used to drive around with his friend in an 80-foot hot dog. Which...
Well, it was called the Wiener Wagon,
okay.
Even better. And it was, if you were America, you'd understand that's iconic. It's an 80-foot Wiener Wagon. And when the horn goes, it does the theme song, which is, I wish I was an Oscar Mayer Wiener. That is what I truly like to be. Because if I was an Oscar Mayer Wiener, everyone would be in love with me. Can you imagine how embarrassing that was as a child?
It's quite a long song as well.
Yeah,
it?
I know. You can cut it.
No. I love that you sang it to us.
Yeah.
But I'm just thinking.
It's catchy.
That's the kind of thing that's funny now, but I imagine as a child.
Horrid.
Yeah.
An 80-foot hot dog pulls into your car.
No.
Into your.
Did he pick you up from school?
Yep.
No. Ruby.
Once.
Ruby.
And I screamed. Yeah. I don't want to discuss it.
No.
It's too traumatic.
Okay.
Would it be 80 feet? Is that too big?
80 feet is big, but I like
that. Let's keep it at 80.
Sounds good.
Could be 50.
Maybe it was, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe it was 8.
No, it was not 8.
It was
it was like a trailer with 2 buns and a hot dog in the middle and my father in the driver's seat.
From everything I read about your childhood, and you talk about it in your book, How Do You Want Me?, it did sound incredibly difficult. You say that home was chaotic, so all days were equally awful. And you were an only child, and I think you've said that you just didn't feel like you were the daughter that they wanted. But Ruby, when I read that, what kind of daughter do you think they did want?
I think they wanted a boy, and they would have called him Carl. Okay. With the C, so my name's Ruby C. Wax, because they thought maybe I'd say, you know how people get upset when you change sexes? Mm. I don't think they would have minded. They really didn't want some dumb, kind of sad-looking daughter, and I was when I was a child. I was kind of, you know, gormless, and my front teeth stuck out and were in another time zone, and my mom cut my hair in a bowl cut, you know, to make me even more unattractive. Mm. So they were very disappointed, and my grades in school were below plant level.
Oh, yeah. But did they live to see
the success? They lived to see it, but they always said, no, it's a mistake.
Really?
Yeah, it's a misprint. Then,
Ruby, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but it got me two great books.
Well, yes, that's true. You say your mother had no idea how to cook. Can you tell a story of how once caught her boiling a chicken and that there was a claw sticking out of the pot
yellow.
And you thought it was your grandmother's hand?
Which... Well, it was kind of that withered yellow thing. And my grandmother's, she was like 150. It was kind of like trying to get out of the pot. And I thought, oh my God, Omi, let her out. I thought, put a wedding ring on it and then take her to the police.
That is terrifying. And you say ever since then, I'm assuming slightly in jest, that you've been scared of going in the kitchen. But in that very same interview, you did say that your mother used to teach you that the stove was dangerous by putting your hand in the flames for a few seconds.
It's a good technique.
Was that
I
true?
Call it German. It's the same way you put a dog's face when he liquidates.
But maybe.
I know. So when I get near, I mean, I'm in a kitchen, but if I have to cook, I'm in a slight sweat.
And so that really did happen.
That noise of a blender scares me. It's okay.
Okay,
I learned
to
eat.
Maybe this is a very traumatic podcast to be
yes,
doing.
I'm going to start screaming.
So growing up in a household where no one loved to cook, I know you've said that salad dressing is the limit of your culinary terrain.
Yes.
But it's time to talk about the second desert island dish. What was the first dish you learned to cook?
Oh, the first dish I learned to cook? Oh, it was probably Aunt Jemima brownie mix.
Mm.
I know you had to put it with water.
Yes.
So that was my forte. Yeah. And then mix it.
Maybe add an egg.
Oh, maybe.
Maybe.
I blocked that one.
No, not
but
necessarily.
It was brownies from a packet, and they were delicious.
So good.
And macaroni and cheese by Kraft. You know, you boil that and you mix something.
Mm.
So it was early packaging. You know, in America, we lived with big packages made usually by Kellogg's.
Yeah.
Everything was packed. The candy bars were packed. My grandmother was packed. Everything was packed.
But you didn't eat her?
Never.
No.
I put my foot down.
And how old were you when you were making brownies? Like, were you quite self-sufficient?
Well, I was a Girl Scout and a brownie. So I think that just, you know, we could sell them. And I knew how to make money even as a child. So we went door to door. I brought my brownies and I charged double.
Okay.
And I didn't give it to the brownies. Don't tell anybody.
Have you ever admitted that before?
Never.
Is this okay?
I've never said that before.
So the brownies are listening.
They're going to call me and they're going to sue me.
Obviously, your work now in the world of mental health and cognitive therapy goes far beyond my very basic couch therapy. But I did wonder when I was reading about your life, how much of what you endured as a child do you think did inform your drive to succeed?
I don't think everybody has a traumatic childhood. You know, Jennifer Saunders is kind of blah, you know, and she likes to muck out horse stables and had a really lovely couple of parents. So I don't think you necessarily have to be traumatized. Or Lumley had a really nice background and they're geniuses.
Yeah.
So I think the trauma informed the way I write. I write very dark and then very light. And so that roller coaster ride is kind of how I had it as a child.
Mm.
And so now my show and my book, I'm Not As Well As I Thought I Was, also talks about my parents, but not going whining, because whining isn't funny.
Yeah.
But their lines were magnificent. You didn't have to edit them. They just came straight out of their mouths.
I was going to ask that. With your life as a comedy writer, have you found that the truth is actually the funniest thing that you
In my
ever...
case, it is.
Okay.
Because I'm not exaggerating.
Yeah.
You know, if you have to lie, then I would be writing fiction.
Yeah.
But they were so magnificent. Carrie Fisher edited my first book, and she said, your parents are almost as crazy as mine, and you can't get a better review than that. That's a great review.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're saying that You don't necessarily need a traumatic childhood in order to succeed. But for you personally,
I got great lines.
Yeah.
Alan Rickman said, he met my parents. He said, just record it and write it.
He knew.
He understood great lines.
Wow. So you have said very self-deprecatingly that you don't believe you had any talent, but you did have a lot of drive. First of all, did you really mean that? And second of all, do you think drive is the most important thing?
Well, if you have no talent, it's embarrassing. And I didn't, but Rickman saw something. So he worked with me for 30 years, training me to be a comedian until he died. And he would always watch everything I did and criticize it.
Oh, really?
And now I think he would be happy with what I do.
That's
it finally
amazing.
Showed up.
That's amazing. Mm. So the learning never stops, really.
No, I work really hard, really hard. So that, I think people are paying. Make sure every line is funny,
yeah,
or craft it. I don't futz around with, hey, anybody from Sheboygan here.
I mean, being taught how to be funny by Alan Rickman is possibly the coolest thing I could ever say.
Yeah. Yeah.
First of all, when did you realize, before Rickman, did you, as a teenager, did you realize that you had a talent for comedy?
Well, I was, as I say in my book, I'm not as well as I thought I was.
Yeah.
That I was an ugly duckling until I was 16. And then I turned from an ugly duckling into Joan Rivers. Mm. And I got all the boys.
Okay.
I got the good looking boys, mostly gay, but it didn't matter. And so out of necessity, because I was ignored and you want to get attention, I wasn't pretty. So I turned on the comedy switch. Mm. Luckily, I had the comedy switch.
Yeah. But I think that's often the case. Like the most... like good-looking people who've always been good-looking have never had to develop any kind of personality.
And then it's a tragedy when they're 50.
Well, yeah, and they're just really boring because they never had to develop.
They never had to turn on the engine.
Yeah. We're going to pause there and talk about the third desert island dish. What's the best dish you've ever eaten?
Well, in Michelin star restaurants, but I don't know what they are. They had juice and something reduced.
Okay.
Something. Maybe duck, could be filet mignon. I don't know, but you know it's expensive.
Yeah.
If food is expensive, I'll like it. Yeah, I got it with chocolate too. I won't just go common. It has to be expensive.
Okay, that's interesting.
So I don't know what I ate, but I know it was a combination of things.
But have you always found that actually to be true? Like the most expensive things that you've eaten have been the best?
No, I usually throw up afterwards because it's so rich.
Yeah.
So I like things like spare ribs. That's my favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they don't make them here the way they do in America.
Oh, yeah.
No, so that's out.
Not quite the same.
Chicken legs. My grandmother ate the bones, and I, too, ate the bones.
Well, I heard you say that, but I didn't know whether you were... You
literally.
Just mean like you gnawed them.
They cut the meat off, and I chew it.
So there's nothing left of the bones?
There's a little bit left. I mean, I don't want to stab myself in the throat, but I do gnaw away. It replaces cigarettes.
Yeah. Much better for you.
Yeah.
And I did read... but I couldn't get to the bottom of why, that you do often walk around with honey in your handbag.
Yeah, and usually when I go into my handbag, you get webs of honey because always opens.
Well, yeah, it's high risk.
Whatever you do, it opens.
Okay, but it hasn't deterred you?
Nope. I put it in everything.
Okay, like tea,
coffee, everything. Yeah.
Okay.
I love the honey, especially so if anybody sees me and they'd like to give me some.
Yeah.
I would appreciate it.
Okay.
But I don't like the ones that look like they're honey. If they have the ingredients on the back, they're not real honey.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, I caught that out.
What about honeycomb?
Yeah, that's hard to eat, though.
That is.
Yeah.
It's harder to drizzle, but maybe easier to eat.
No, very difficult.
Okay. Bad for your teeth.
And that, if in your handbag, forget it. You got to...
Yeah, you need a little knife.
You need bees in the honey bag, basically, to keep churning
it. That is what you need.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll work on that. Please, can you tell us about the time that you say you fell in love with a digestive biscuit?
Oh, I was in a silent retreat, which I've just done again. And in the show, I talk about going on a 30-day silent retreat. Mm. So you lose your mind for the first 5 days, but then things, because you have no distraction and you've been doing mindfulness, you start to, everything becomes more poignant. Mm. And so I ate a bit into it. I mean, everything's ecstatic. I ate an egg and I ran in the kitchen and broke the silence and said, how did you make this? They said, with an egg. And granola, forget about it. You're fainting. Your eyes are rolled back. But then I bit into a digestive biscuit and almost died. Because you don't talk to anybody saying, how are you doing? What do you do for a living? So if you taste that in your mouth, I saved it. I saved it for like the 10 days. And every day I'd have a little gnaw. And when it's that delicious, you say you don't eat it at once.
It reminded me how quite often to the best dish you've ever eaten, people will say the toast after they've given birth, like the NHS. Like,
oh, yeah. They give
toast.
You the biscuit, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every time you're in the hospital. And I have a lot of surgery because I insist on it.
Okay.
I like the anesthetic.
Okay.
So I have things done that, no, I've had my knees done 40 times. Now they won't let me do it anymore. But when they
Move
wake you
ankles.
Up and you give you a digestive biscuit, that might be why I like them.
Yeah, maybe. But also it made me think it's so interesting that it just goes to show how disconnected we are or can be with the food we eat. We're often on our phones or we're just thinking about the next thing.
Oh,
we're not
yeah.
actually tasting what we're eating.
We don't. And then when you do mind, you know, but you have to do it quite a lot.
Mm.
You get the red mist down. So you're not in the future and not in the past. You're right there with the biscuit.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
Yeah.
I find it very difficult when I'm not in a silent retreat because my life is, you know, in front of me.
Yeah.
Which so, I want to stop.
So do you find it's a very important thing for you to do, to do these retreats?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then they fade away after I come back, but
Mine, I was going to ask that because it's a bit like...
But I remember.
Mm.
And I'll always make sure I do it once a year.
Okay.
I remember how happy I was.
Yes. This might be a very bad analogy, but when I was reading that, it made me think, like, you know, if you break your ankle and you swear as soon as your ankle is healed, you will be grateful to your ankle every day and you'll really
and then you
treasure
forget.
All the moments. And then after a day, you're just like, well,
yeah,
that's just
you're
my
smashing
ankle.
That ankle
yeah.
again.
Like, how long do you find the effects last?
I keep it up. And when I do it, I can get there, you know, or I can have horrible sittings of mindfulness because people say you stop your thoughts. You don't stop them. You listen to them.
Mm.
So they, at least you know when you're talking to somebody, it's because you're gabbling too much inside.
Mm.
So you really need to be conscious that you're filled to the hilt. It's like you're full of garbage.
Yeah.
So sometimes I'll walk away and cool the engine down. That doesn't mean they stop. They're just quieter.
Yeah. That makes sense. So you launched the Frazzled Cafe in 2017, which is all about community, cohesion and inclusion. Has the need for the Frazzled Cafes always been there and it just didn't exist? Or is this state of stress and the stress of being stressed a fairly modern thing?
Yeah, that's totally modern.
It's modern.
That's what frazzled means. Mm-hmm. It means stress on stress. We need stress. You need that that cortisol jolt. Otherwise, you wouldn't get up in the morning.
Okay.
And it makes ambition. Which is great. But when you're getting stressed because you're stressed, like because somebody didn't call, why didn't they call? You'll never get to the bottom of it.
Mm.
You'll never get to why you feel, you know, fat when you're not fat. This is stress on stress, and this is a new phenomenon. And
okay.
It's exasperated by social media judging you all the time.
Mm.
Or, you know, you have to be the most beautiful, the most successful, the most, because we read about each other.
Mm.
If it's just a neighborhood, you could be beautiful and you're a mess.
Has that been something that you've seen about your career? Like when you were doing all the TV, are you grateful that social media wasn't a thing?
Well, I wouldn't have been able to spend a week with each celebrity.
That's true.
So
20 minutes.
And they're, yeah, 20 minutes and you're out at the most.
Yeah.
And so I could spend a week with them. And if I showed them a good time, they'd let me stay.
Mm.
You had to audition for them.
Okay.
Yeah. Otherwise it is 5 minutes.
Okay. Oh, that's
so
interesting.
Nobody... You know what I mean?
So it wasn't preordained that you had a week?
No, they'd say sometimes a few minutes. And then you'd say, what are you doing tonight? And then we just keep the cameras on.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Mm.
So maybe it could happen nowadays. No.
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 Because it would there'd be PR. There'd be, you know, watching their reputation. Mm. Because if that got out, nobody judged then. Nobody
yeah,
judged.
True. Oh, yeah. It was a better time.
It was a better time.
It's time to pause and talk about the most important question of the day. Ruby Wax, what is your favorite sandwich?
Oh, I don't eat sandwiches because I've cut down on carbs.
Okay.
But sandwiches are my BLTs.
You can't go wrong.
You can't go wrong.
No.
But, you know, when I get the news that my life is shortened, yeah. BLTs are the first in my mouth.
Why are they so good?
Because, well, Americans know how to make bacon. Sorry, I don't usually stand up for America.
Okay.
But they know how to make bacon. It's crispy instead of this flab of somebody's inner thigh on a piece of bread.
Ruby, you need to have streaky bacon. We have streaky bacon.
I know, but it's never
not the
same.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I've not heard you defend America.
No,
that
that'll be the only area.
Yeah. Bacon.
And ribs. That's it.
Okay. Yeah. You have, over the course of your career, interviewed some of the biggest names in the world. Was there anyone that you really wanted to interview and you just didn't get the chance? Like either they said no or it just didn't happen.
It would be interesting to talk to Obama because he'd be a little more transparent than any other politician. Mm. And so we never even tried.
Yeah.
You know, I've talked to Clinton and whatever, and they have a front. Mm. So it's hard to break through, and they'll just say to me what they say to any interviewer. And my whole thing was say what you never, or act the way you never did. I don't need dirt. No. I just want them to act human.
Yeah, I think that's a good slogan,
We couldn't even approach it, no.
It's weird, isn't it? Why do they think that we want that weird front? We just want a person.
I think because of social media, they don't want to be reported as showing anything except their, you know, shtick.
Don't reveal that you're human.
That's why I have frazzled, because they come on, people come online and they speak the truth.
Yeah.
And they take off the mask. Mm. Yeah.
Which must be very, if you're living that life, it must be overwhelming. You've said that you came to the UK in part to escape your parents, but also in part to marry one of the Beatles,
It didn't work out.
Paul McCartney.
I never really met him except once I got too drunk and I was under the table. But I came here to marry one of them. Yeah, that was it.
Would you have wanted to interview someone like that?
When I've met the Beatles, I could do this. That would be the interview.
That would have been great, Ruby.
Yeah, great. No embarrassment.
I've heard that when you did your big interviews, part of the thing was that you would go for supper beforehand in order to get to know them and sort of, you know, get acquainted, which obviously makes a lot of sense because by the time you start the interview, everyone's relaxed. But I wondered, when I read that, was the supper part of that an important thing, the fact that it was over food? Because I feel like having food together is quite
intimate.
Well, I
had a TV show where there were four guests and we all sat around a dinner table, and that went on for 2 years. I don't think you can watch it, but it was two years of doing, there were eight cameras watching really interesting combinations like Bruce Robinson and Boy George and Jean Moreau and I think the woman who edited the Washington Post and, you know, a criminal and the guy who got on top of Everest who fell down. Goodness. And, you know, I'd mix them up, Julian Clary or Jennifer Saunders. I had big players on there.
That's
Salman Rushdie, Carrie Fisher. And you'd watch us just from the start to the end. Mm. And we filmed for 3 hours and then cut it to a half an hour.
Wow.
Yeah. It was
amazing.
A really good show.
Yeah. That's such a good premise.
Yeah.
And so the food was an important part.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
It's sort of,
it was delicious. Yeah.
But it's very intimate as well.
Yeah.
Eating with
someone. And people forgot about the cameras. Mm. Yeah.
Apart from when they're worried you didn't serve the spaghetti bolognese or something.
No, but they just let it rip.
Mm.
Yeah.
Ruby, you've done so many things. We're on to the fifth desert island dish. What's the dish you eat the most often?
Chicken. And every morning I eat this bread called crou. It's the most expensive bread in the world.
Oh, wow.
If they'd like to send me free ones. And it has no carbs in it, but it's delicious.
What's it made with?
I don't know. It's coconut and it's elixir. I have it every morning in my life.
Where'd you get it?
It's crou. You have to order it online, C-R-U. And it's not made with flour, but it's like cake. Yeah.
Sounds delicious.
Try it. I don't give it to anybody, but if you'd like to see the package, I'll show it to you.
Ruby, I thought you were about to offer me a nibble.
No. It's too expensive.
And when you say chicken, is that, because I know you like the chicken bones, but you'll take a chicken anyway.
No, I won't eat the meat, but if the bones are good or the wings are really crispy, I'll eat those completely. And what do I eat the most? Well, I would be eating chocolate, you know, Sundays.
Yes.
And I would be eating banana splits. I saw one last night and I really want to woof it. But I'm on the West End, so I have to keep my figure down.
I mean, you look amazing, so you don't have to worry about anything like that. But are you conscious when you are performing in the West End and then your sellout show? Are you conscious of what you're eating like before a show? You don't want to have like a really big meal. Are you thinking of it from that?
I think about food most of the time, even when I'm on stage.
Okay.
I think about what I'm going to eat.
What you're going to have when you get off. And what's the answer?
Oh, it could be anything. Now I eat salads because I'm down to that.
Okay. But you must be full of adrenaline. So when you do the shows, are you up until
I think I do mindfulness. So I cool down the engine so that when you come on, which Rickman wanted, is that you're just talking to them. If I'm too full of adrenaline, you feel my fear. Yeah. And I want them to go, oh, I'm relaxed now. Now I can laugh.
That's amazing. So that's where you are.
I do
now.
A lot of mindfulness.
Okay.
Yeah.
That hasn't always been the case.
Did no, you used to I used get to get hysterical nervous? And he'd say, stop being so desperate.
That's a very good impression. I'm
Thank
sorry.
You.
You must miss him a lot.
Yeah.
I've mentioned this idea that your career is split into a first and second career, but to kickstart that second career, you went to Oxford to do a master's. Were you on campus?
Yeah.
What did the other students think of?
They didn't. I mean, the ones who knew me thought it was pathetic because I was in TV and that's kind of low life. So they weren't impressed.
Really?
Yeah, these were genetic engineers and things. They don't really care that I had a TV show.
And how?
So I was mistreated until they saw I was really, I got it.
Yeah, yeah. That's interesting.
Then they got impressed.
So you felt like you had to prove yourself
Yeah,
more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had to, but it was my interest,
yeah.
Neuroscience. So, you know, I got my degree and they didn't, some of them.
And how did you find going back and studying?
Oh, I thought that's revenge because I was thrown out of Busy Beaver Nursery School. I can't make that
of
up.
Of course you went to
Busy Beaver Nursery School. I was thrown out. I was five.
Why? What did you do?
I went to the toilet next to it.
Oh.
It happens.
Well, yeah, you're only five. You're not 25.
No, it happened in 25 too.
Your show was a complete sellout in 2023. It's your rawest, darkest, funniest, and most compelling stage show.
Thank you.
And something I always wonder with shows like this, obviously it's you, so there's a lot of humour, but to talk about really dark times on stage, do you have to kind of disassociate from it?
It's only dark for a little while. Once I go into the 30-day retreat and I talk about the gong being so loud, my cervix vibrated, or swimming with humpbacks, or taking you into Christian monasteries. That's the comedy.
Yeah.
Then there is dark because I went on all these journeys to find meaning and I didn't find meaning. I ended up in a mental ward. The mental ward is even funny, but clearly the reason I'm in there is dark.
It doesn't affect you talking about it
no,
every night.
No, because you're so concentrated on performing that you don't think, oh, well, this really happened.
And is every show the same?
The same. I mean, you vary it because of the audience and they laugh at different points, but I never go, I might go off piece because somebody said something, or I'll say, you know, this isn't interactive because somebody talks to me, but they might say, yeah, that's terrible. And I'll say, this is not interactive. Like, your opinion isn't that interesting to me. They don't mind. But the show is bathed in soundscape and light. So they're going on my cues. Yeah.
That sounds amazing. I need to go.
So you feel you are where I'm talking about. Mm. It's not just stand up with a mic.
When I go to these shows, I always wonder, like, is it very draining doing it day after day?
I think, you know, people who work 8 hours a day, that's draining. I'm working 2 hours a night. That's it. And then I meet everybody afterwards. But that's it. And when I meet everybody afterwards, because I'm selling books, and if you don't want to buy a book, I'll still talk. That gives me energy. So I leave energized, not drained.
So you get energy from being
from people
with
talking,
people.
Talking to the public, yeah. Mm. And I'm going to have a Frazzle Cafe once a week where I run it in the Ambassador's Theater during the day, I think
amazing.
On Wednesdays.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah, it's free.
Amazing. Mm. I think the other thing I really wanted to ask after reading all about your life is that you've had these amazing careers. You write books that become bestsellers and then stage shows that become sellout shows. Have you done anything that hasn't worked?
Oh, yeah. I had a show in America that flopped. A lot of things flop. Yeah, I did a game show that flopped. Don't think I don't remember that.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember it loud and clear. So I do have things that don't work.
Yeah.
You know, the book doesn't get into the bestseller list or it only stays a little while. But I don't think at least I got there. I think, why isn't it in longer?
Okay, that's interesting.
And I'm really scared about the Ambassadors coming up.
No, what if nobody?
What if nobody comes? That's my biggest fear.
Obviously, people are going to come.
I don't, maybe three.
No,
I'm
more
scared.
Than three.
I'm scared.
That's so interesting. That's what I would classify as imposter syndrome. Like, you're Ruby Wax.
No, but it does. They still might not come.
Okay, so that fear never.
They
goes
might
away.
Not come because I am Ruby Wax, because they don't like me. It
no,
can happen. Yeah,
no.
It can happen.
That definitely won't happen. I promise.
All right.
Okay,
I'm
going to
sue you.
I'll be there.
If you're lying to me.
We're on to the sixth Desert Island dish. What's your go-to dinner party dish? Do you throw dinner parties?
I'm supposed to be. I hate it. But I make at barbecue.
Mm.
So we're doing lamb chops. Really fancy people, and I'm already gagging.
No.
Really gagging because I'm nervous. I don't remember dinner parties. If it's really fancy, do you serve potato chips before? Or I'm not going to do hors d'oeuvres.
Yes. I think a good tip is the fancier the people are, the simpler you make the
like
food.
Like nuts.
Yeah.
And then we'll do lamb chops. Do fancy people like corn on the cob and baked potatoes or no?
Baked potatoes, yes.
Yeah.
I can't answer as a fancy person, but nibbling the corn on the
all
cob
right.
is quite a...
hard. See, that's my favorite
food.
It's
quite
hard
food. To do that cheek.
Because it's
cheeky.
Oral again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. So what would you, like roasted vegetables?
Yeah, roasted vegetable. Or just keep it really simple. Lamb chops, a jacket potato, everyone loves that.
Yeah,
maybe a bit of sour cream and chives, maybe some roasted vegetables and like a lemony yogurt.
Oh.
Roasted aubergine.
Roasted aubergine.
Pomegranate with the lamb.
Oh my God, you'll have to get, what recipe book should I use?
I'll send you a recipe.
But I need it by Thursday.
I've got one on my website.
Really. All right.
I'll send it to you
immediately.
Okay. I know you aren't the cook in your house. Your husband, Ed, does all the cooking. And also I read he does the washing up as well.
Yes, he does.
Which, I mean,
I think it's
like...
fair because mama makes the money.
But yeah, when I read that, I mean, who wants to do
the
washing up?
Well, I buy the food.
Okay.
That's something.
So yeah, you are dividing the jobs.
Yeah.
So maybe this is a question for Ed. Does he have a most treasured cookbook? Do you have a most treasured cookbook?
I had one about anti-inflammatory. But I wouldn't say it's my
treasured.
Good. It's okay. Just I'm trying to stay healthy.
What are the top tips for being anti-inflammatory?
All different colored vegetables. Now, where do you get different colored vegetables? It's green and yellow if you go to even a stand.
Yes.
There is no different colored. So they're driving me crazy with their multicolored vegetables.
What about red cabbage?
Yeah, okay.
Purple.
There's a three. Purple.
Tomatoes.
Don't like them.
Oh.
And they say don't eat them.
Yeah, I think they're very acidic. I think
so that's three things.
So that you're not saving that cookbook from a burning building.
No, I like ottolenghi, but can I follow it? No.
No. Does Ed?
No, he doesn't cook either.
What? I thought Ed is
No,
the
we
cook.
Have a lady who cleans.
Okay.
She can cook.
She makes your granola in the morning.
No, granola comes from, I can't eat it anymore because no carbs.
Okay. Well, on to the final seventh desert island dish. What's the last dish you would choose to eat before being cast off to the desert island?
Right. I'm having fried zucchini, French fries. Oh my God. I never eat those. French fries, a hamburger or a hot dog and a hot fudge sundae.
Mm.
That's what I want.
That sounds amazing.
Because it doesn't matter if I'm fat on my island.
No, the more you eat, the longer you're going to last.
Yeah, a whole packet of digestives.
Yeah, just what, as a little after
Yeah,
after
as
supper.
A prey.
A petit four.
Yes.
Ruby Wax, those are your desert island dishes.
Oh, thank you
so much.
Do you promise to send me the recipes?
Yes, I promise.
Because they're fancy.
Yes, I promise.
Okay, what should we have for dessert?
So there we have it, another delicious day of Desert Island Dishes. Don't forget, you can find me on Instagram at Desert Island Dishes, where you'll find snippets from the interviews, lots of recipes, and much, much more. You can visit the website desertislanddishes.co, or you can sign up for my weekly newsletter, Dinner Tonight, where I share one easy and delicious weeknight recipe. You can find that at dinnertonight.substack.com. Thank you again to Mold and Salt, our sponsor for this season of Desert Island Dishes. They help us to bring the podcast to you every week. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next week.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.